Welcome to the Deep Dive. We sift through articles, research, our own notes, really, to find those insights that help you get well-informed fast. Today, we're diving into a really fascinating ancient text, Psalm 16. It's this profound poem, sometimes overlooked, but honestly, it offers some surprisingly timely wisdom about things like trust, joy, and, you know, that deep security we're all looking for. So our mission here is to unpack its original meaning, but then really connect it to our lives today. How can this ancient reflection encourage obedience and maybe strengthen our faith right now? Let's jump in.
Absolutely. And what's interesting right off the bat is that it's called a miktam of David.
Mm.
Now, that word miktam, it's a bit obscure, but scholars often think it means something like a golden psalm or maybe an engraved psalm.
Engraved, like etched.
Exactly. As if it's something deeply personal, maybe even secret, that David felt was so fundamental, so important, it needed to be permanently marked, almost like etched into his soul, because it's this really intimate look into his spiritual life.
Etched into his soul. I like that.
Yeah.
Because you really feel that depth when you read it. What strikes me immediately is just how completely he relies on God. He calls God his refuge, his portion, his guide. The whole thing just breathes this loyalty to God.
Yeah, unwavering loyalty.
And a really clear rejection of, well, anything else that might pull him away. Plus this deep, almost bubbling joy that he finds just by living in God's presence.
Mm-hmm. Moment by moment.
It builds and builds, doesn't it?
Yeah.
To this incredible declaration of confidence in God, a confidence that amazingly seems to look even beyond death itself.
The confidence is just so powerful. And some of the lines, they really stick with you, don't they?
Oh, absolutely. Anchors, like you said. Think about verse 1 right at the start. Preserve me, O God. For in thee do I put my trust. So simple, so direct.
Mm-hmm. Sets the tone immediately.
Yeah, verse 5, that beautiful image. The Lord is the portion of mine inheritance and of my cup. Thou maintainest my lot. There's so much packed into that.
Inheritance language, yeah.
Yeah.
Very rich.
And verse 8, this is one I keep coming back to. I have set the Lord always before me. Because he is at my right hand, I shall not be moved. That constant focus.
A cornerstone verse, for sure.
And it all flows into that amazing conclusion, verse 11. Thou wilt show me the path of life. In thy presence is fullness of joy. At thy right hand, there are pleasures forevermore. Just, wow. Each verse feels like a gem.
It really does.
Yeah.
And if we try to unpack the, let's call it the ancient wisdom here, there are some key things David's teaching us.
Yeah.
First off, this trust he talks about,
mm-hmm.
It's not just for emergencies, right? It's not a panic button.
Yeah, not just a break glass in case of fire kind of thing.
Exactly. It's presented as a daily posture, a continuous choice. When he says, I have set the Lord always before me in verse 8, that's active. That's ongoing. His security isn't coming from his own plans or his status as king or his military strength. It's rooted entirely in this living, breathing relationship with God. It's a deliberate orientation of his whole life.
So it's less about hoping things turn out okay and more about actively living as if God is his security, his future right now, even before the outcome is clear.
Precisely. Which, you know, feels incredibly countercultural today, doesn't it?
Yeah.
We're pushed so hard to control everything, to manage risk.
Right. To have a plan B, C, and D.
Mm-hmm. And that leads right into his rejection of what he calls false paths. In verse 4, he's very clear about distancing himself from idol worship. He says those who run after other gods just multiply their sorrows.
Multiply sorrows. That's
yeah.
A stark phrase.
It is. And this wisdom is timeless. He's not just talking about, you know, literal statues of wood and stone.
No, it applies much broader.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It speaks to anything that competes for our ultimate trust, our core allegiance. Think about modern equivalents, maybe chasing status or needing constant approval online or maybe even just relentless self-indulgence.
Those can definitely become idols, things we look to for security or meaning.
Right. And the psalm warns that these things promise happiness, but they just can't deliver. They inevitably lead to more anxiety, more dissatisfaction. It's a really practical reason for obedience to God, avoiding those dead ends.
It's not just a moral point. It's almost pragmatic. Chasing those things makes life harder, adds sorrow.
That's a great way to put it. Pragmatic.
Yeah.
And then you have that incredibly rich picture in verse 5. God is your portion.
Hmm.
In that culture, your portion and your cup, that was your inheritance, your land allotment, your security, mm-hmm. your livelihood, everything.
So David's saying God isn't just like a part of his life.
No, not just an add-on. He's saying God is his inheritance. God is his security. God is the provider of everything he truly needs. It's this radical statement of sufficiency.
Wow.
It really strengthens faith because it frames God as genuinely enough for everything, spiritual and, well, even material.
That completely shifts your perspective, doesn't it? God isn't just someone you pray to. He's the ground you stand on, your source for everything.
Exactly. And all of this, this trust, this rejection of false paths, this finding sufficiency in God.
Yeah.
It culminates in that profound joy David describes.
Right, the joy in verse 11.
Yes. He ends the psalm not with fear, not with uncertainty about death or the future, but with this bold declaration. In thy presence is fullness of joy. At thy right hand, there are pleasures forevermore. And notice, it's fullness of joy, not just fleeting happiness that depends on things going well.
Yeah, it's deeper, more stable.
It's an abiding gladness rooted in something eternal, God's presence itself. And that kind of joy, that really anchors our faith, doesn't it? It shifts our focus from chasing temporary highs to finding delight in something unchanging.
So taking all this ancient wisdom, how does it really land for us today? Because, I mean, that quiet confidence in Psalm 16 feels like it speaks directly into the anxieties we feel now, whereas about identity, money, purpose, the future.
Oh, absolutely. It's not just ancient poetry. It's incredibly relevant. When we start applying this seriously, its power to encourage, well, godly living and to really anchor our hope becomes clear. Take security, for instance. Our world screams at us to find safety in what? Our jobs, our savings, our status, maybe even just our routines.
Yeah, the things we feel we can control.
Right. But David models something completely different, a deeper, more lasting security that comes from trusting God as this steady, reliable presence, regardless of how chaotic things get externally. That perspective really strengthens faith because it pushes us to rely on God more than on, you know, the shaky foundations the world offers. It's obedience in where we place our trust.
It's a challenge, though. Our default is often to cling to the tangible. David's way feels almost radical.
It is radical.
Yeah.
And that connects back to resisting those cultural idols we talked about. Again, not statues, but the endless chase for approval, for power, for more stuff, for constant self-gratification. Psalm 16 warns that these things increase sorrows.
It's a practical warning.
It is. It highlights the anxiety, the striving, the ultimate emptiness that comes from tying our worth to things that are by nature fleeting and external. They just can't satisfy.
Yeah.
Understanding that gives us a really compelling reason to obey God, to turn away from those empty promises.
It really forces you to examine your own priorities, doesn't it? What are you really chasing?
Exactly. And then there's verse 8 again. I have set the Lord always before me. In our incredibly distracted world, that's a call to, well, maybe a kind of spiritual mindfulness.
Mindfulness. How so?
It's about cultivating an active awareness of God being near, right here, right now, throughout the day. Maybe through intentional prayer, yes, but also through gratitude, noticing his work, just consciously paying attention to his presence.
Like keeping him in view, mentally and spiritually.
Precisely. And that consistent awareness, it doesn't just feel good. It naturally encourages obedience, doesn't it? Because you're constantly reminded of who he is, his love, his guidance, it builds a much more active, vibrant relationship.
And that links back to the joy, that fullness of joy. It's found in his presence.
Yes. Which means it's not dependent on circumstances being perfect. It's a deeper, more resilient kind of joy anchored in something, or rather, someone who doesn't change. That's huge for strengthening faith. Finding peace even when things are tough because your source of joy is secure.
An unshakable source.
Exactly. And finally, think about the end of the psalm, those last verses. They're often seen, especially through a New Testament lens, as pointing towards resurrection, towards eternal life.
Hope beyond the grave.
Mm-hmm. For anyone wrestling with loss or fear about the future or just the big questions about mortality, this psalm offers incredible hope. It points to a life and a purpose that extend far beyond our earthly existence. That provides immense comfort and really strengthens faith in God's ultimate eternal plan. It turns fear into, well, maybe even joyful expectation.
So wrapping up this deep dive into Psalm 16, it feels like the big takeaway is this call to find our real security, our lasting joy, our true purpose.
Yeah.
Not out there somewhere, but right here in God. A God who's always present, always faithful, always enough.
That's beautifully put. And maybe something for you listening to ponder is just the sheer transformative power of consciously shifting your focus each day. What happens when you intentionally move your gaze from the swirling circumstances around you to the steady, unchanging presence with you?
That's a powerful thought to leave with, and it leads right into our final question for you. In what areas of your life can you intentionally practice setting the Lord always before you like David did? And how might making that conscious choice begin to deepen your trust and truly elevate your joy?